Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm now joined by Mark Paul, who's co-author with Joe Matthews of California Crackup, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How It Can Be Fixed. He was formerly national editor and editorial page editor of the Oakland Tribune and deputy editorial page editor and columnist at the Sacramento Bee. In 2004, Mr. Paul was appointed deputy treasurer of the state of California. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Paul.
It's good to be with you, Ian.
And I guess they'll actually meet the budget on time, right? Friday's the deadline, and there is a budget, and I take it the governor's, has he signed it yet?
Yes, he has. He has signed it. So there is a budget in place for the fiscal year that begins tomorrow.
And I suppose, and how much did the threat of them having their pay docked get them focused there, do you think?
Well, their pay actually was docked, so I think that was part of the focus. But it was, I think, the governor and the legislature deciding that there was no possibility to reach an agreement with Republicans on taxes that the governor had sought, so that they decided instead to go with a budget that originally is. Brown described as all cuts, but which at this point is a combination of cuts and prayers that some money magically materialize in the Treasury.
So I think the total deficit was something like $27.1 billion, and then $11 billion of cuts were slashed in March, and this budget plan expects $4 billion from increased revenues, which may or may not materialize. And if they don't materialize, there are built-in triggers that would make additional cuts of around $2.5 billion. I take it they're particularly painful cuts, right?
Well, they would be. They'd be focused largely. There are two tiers of additional cuts. The first tier, which would be focused heavily on higher education. Higher education in the budget that's passed has lost about $1.8 billion, another $300 million would come out of UC, CSU, and community colleges if the first trigger is activated. And the second trigger, if revenue falls even shorter, would be focused on K through 12 schools, about $1.2 billion.
And the great prison industrial complex that takes in more money than the schools, commensurate cuts there?
Well, I mean, the prisons don't take more than the schools. The schools are still the largest part of the state budget, and there are cuts in prisons and a realignment of money away from the state prison system to local governments to do more parole and nonviolent offender supervision at the local level rather than through the state budget. But in this budget, the big losers are higher education, social service programs for low income and disabled persons, and the schools. They're the biggest losers in this budget battle.
But I suppose then, Mark Paul, it's accurate to say that over the last few decades, that the once internationally recognized education model of the state of California, which was way at the top, which is now hovering at the bottom with Mississippi, while education is diminished and its funding is diminished, prisons have grown and their funding has grown. It's like a zero-sum game, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, this prisons certainly have been the largest. Prisons and healthcare are the two areas of the state budget that have grown the most over the last couple of decades. The prisons, largely because of the pay and pensions of the prison guards. California doesn't imprison a lot of people relative to other states, but it pays the prison guards much, much more.
And so what do you think happened in terms of Jerry Brown, somehow his faith in the idea that the four Republican lawmakers would join him and extend the tax cuts that were already existing, which would have been the simplest and easiest solution, and clearly the one that the governor wanted. But was he naive? I mean, he apparently just said that they're referring to the Republicans. There's an almost religious reluctance to ever deal with the state budget in a way that requires new revenues.
I think he probably overestimated his ability to either persuade or to charm Republican legislators, particularly in as much as what he was asking them to do was to agree to let voters extend for another 4 years the temporary taxes enacted in 2009. And had they agreed to that, they would have become essentially irrelevant in the state capitol for the remainder of Brown's term. The Republicans would have been. It's the only real power they have as the minority party is the power given to them by the two-thirds vote requirements in the California Constitution to say no to what other people do. That's their only leverage. And Brown was asking them to give that up, and they were unwilling to do it.
Yeah, but they were willing, as the price for them having some political relevance, is to make life miserable for students and California citizens. I mean, isn't somebody making the case of what the price you pay for this kind of obstruction?
Well, people will make the case, but of course the problem is in California's system is that we have a budget which only Democrats voted for. The Democrats in the legislature passed it, even though none of them wanted it. Neither did the governor who signed it. But the Republicans all voted against this budget, and they are already now out complaining about some of the cuts and the impact on their own districts. In Riverside, the University of California Riverside announced yesterday that it couldn't move ahead on its plan for a medical school for the campus. Republicans are saying, well, gee, we fought to keep that in the budget. Well, of course they didn't vote for the taxes that made it possible. Same thing in Orange County now, is that Republicans are saying they're outraged that the budget takes away from Orange County some money. The state had been bailing out Orange County for its bankruptcy from back in the 1990s, and the legislature shifted that money to other uses, and Republicans now are complaining about it. But so they feel no responsibility for the budget that resulted for their intransigence on taxes, and they will probably continue to go around and tell their voters, oh, we didn't vote for this budget, they did.
And that really brings into question whether the California voters are paying any attention. I mean, because it's pretty obvious the blatant hypocrisy of that position.
Well, most of them don't pay attention, but the Republicans, there are a system of two-thirds, all these two-thirds rules, there's nobody really to hold accountable, because this is a budget that neither party wanted.
Sure.
And both of them can legitimately say, had they been in control of things, they would have done something different. But of course, under the rules, you can't do anything different than this, which is
even though Prop 25 robbed the Republican minority of their ability to hold any budget hostage, they still have the veto power on tax hikes. That's
exactly, and that has been the veto power that's generally been the more important one. 25 didn't solve the basic problem for
people. Right, but the other proposition that failed would have, right?
No, I don't think that was several years back in 2004.
Oh, okay.
Voters have not agreed to do that. But we, as we argue in California Crack Up, we really need to overhaul this whole system. And this year's budget is just one more example. And of course, the price that we're going to pay for in our future for the cuts in both higher ed and schools are enormous for our failure to fix our governing system.
Well, even if this budget roughly will close a $10 billion shortfall, but there'll still be another deficit right next year.
Oh yeah, and for all the foreseeable future, Brown tried to work out a 5-year fix. That's what the Republicans blocked. So we'll be back at it again fairly soon, and of course, as early as December, we'll probably see the trigger cuts begin going into effect that for higher ed and for K-12 schools.
Well, when you talk about the dysfunction in California with this handful of Republicans holding this whole state hostage and the tyranny of the minority because of these supermajorities, which actually come out of the South and Jim Crow, at a national level, we have a similar situation. You know, there's a paralysis over the so-called debt ceiling issue, which is a phony issue, but it is leading to a kind of paralysis, leading, in fact, to Senator Chuck Schumer for saying today that Republicans really want to ruin the economy so that they can get reelected or get elected in 2012, something that seems that I'd be somewhat suspicious of, and other people have said I'm too cynical, but there it is, that somebody else has said it.
Well, in California, the Republicans certainly have made reducing taxes and blocking tax increases the defining message, they have. It's not necessarily a popular message. Voters were in the polling were willing in polls that they thought that the best approach to the California's budget crisis was a mix of spending cuts and taxes. But what the voters want, the system doesn't allow the majority of the legislature to provide.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Mark Paul.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, Mark Paul is the author, co-author of California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How It Can Be Fixed. And in 2004, he's appointed Deputy Treasurer of the State of California. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? We began with Sydney Quirum, who's a consultant with Human Rights Watch, and she was on the border of Libya and Tunisia. She's been in Libya for several months in the worst war zones of Misrata and in the Western Mountains, where there's an assault underway trying to capture a key town so they have an opening to Tripoli. She really did explain the human rights catastrophe in that country in ways that you don't often hear. She's witnessed so much killing of innocent civilians and grad rocket attacks, these indiscriminate salvos of rockets that come raining in on civilian populations in cities. She's also witnessed the refugee crisis on the borders, where you have lots of people, unfortunate, mostly African migrant workers who have been kicked out, and they're being victimized because Gaddafi is using African mercenaries and the rebels are targeting these people. So it's a whole thing is a very, very unpleasant picture. But she did say that ultimately the key to ending this thing is the extent to which the rebels have a growing foothold within Tripoli itself. And I picked up that theme afterwards with the following guest, who was a former Libyan diplomat. He was also a translator for Gaddafi. He knows Gaddafi well, Dr. Abubakar Saad. He was saying that that the rebels are already in Tripoli, and that they're smuggling arms in, and of a nighttime they own the city, at least parts of the city of a nighttime, and they're out there terrorizing Gaddafi's conscripts, even though Gaddafi has, I think he said, about 14 brigades in Tripoli itself. That's his last stand. There is a sense that this is demoralizing his army, and that may well end up being what will finally end this agony. Because clearly the stalemate has gone on for some time, and NATO is not proving decisive, and nobody particularly wants to arm these rebels. And he pointed that out in, I think, with a certain bitterness, although the French are apparently dropping arms to supply some of the rebels, which he now refers to as Libyan National Army or something, some new acronym. But the long and the short of it is, he doesn't think, since he knows Gaddafi, that Gaddafi's going to do anything except come out of there in a box. This is not a guy that's going to give up by any means. And then we looked into, in the last segment, given all the states in the union that are having tremendous financial distress, none more than the state of California or the state of dysfunction, where we spoke with the former deputy treasurer of the state of California, Mark Paul, about the budget, the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects of Governor Brown's budget, which depends somewhat on California dreaming in terms of its revenue projections. But the state is still basically hamstrung by the Republican minority, the tyranny of the minority. And it's the same kind of obstructionism that the Republicans are practicing nationwide, where they're prepared to destroy the economy in order to get their way. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter, our production intern, Graham Fitzgibbon, and Erica Rivera. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com, where I'm also writing a daily blog. Go to ianmasters.com and click on blog. So I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Another headline written down in America. The guy that lived next door in 305.